Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I am your host, Mark Verde, CEO and founder of Content Marketing Plaza, bringing you three new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Now, if your breakthrough is to become an influencer who makes money doing what you love, we recently opened up the Advanced Influencer Mastermind. You can claim your free 30-day trial and learn more about it at contentmarketingplaza.com/mastermind. That link will be in the show notes. But going into today's episode, one of the things that we have to master is emotional intelligence. This is huge for being successful with your own business. It's also huge to foster it with the assistants who may be helping you with your business, the employees who you have. It's really important to foster that into them so they put in meaningful work and they have a sense of really strong attachment and love for the work that they do. So we're going to talk about the language of emotional intelligence in this episode. Today's guest who joins us today is a keynote speaker, CEO, coach, and global expert in the language of leadership. Prior to retiring at 42, he was the award-winning CEO of one of the largest family-owned software companies on the planet. His expertise in the language of leadership is based upon his unique experience as a global CEO, leading teams in three languages while observing and doing business with executives in over 40 countries, while building businesses in six countries and living in three of them. So today's guest for episode 325 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Krister Ungerbach. Krister, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, I am happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Krister, I'm really happy to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast. I know there is so much for us to cover on the language of emotional intelligence. Before we do that, though, I'm wondering if you could give us some background. I know we mentioned just a little earlier, you are the global expert in the language of leadership. So I'm wondering if you could share a little bit of that backstory and how this whole path to leadership began.
Yeah, so it started actually, I moved to Paris shortly after September 11th in 2001 to start our business in France. And I had learned French, you know, as many Americans do. I grew up in the U.S. and I'd learned French for about 6 years in high school. And when I got on the street in Paris and tried to speak French to people on the street, they would respond back to me in English because my French was so bad. And I figured, well, I just need to practice it. So one of our first, or actually our second client in France was the Le Palais de Festival de Cannes, which is the host of the Cannes Film Festival. So I went down and did a 3-day workshop all in French because they didn't speak English there. And subsequently, I got a call from my French salesperson the following Monday morning, and he said, boss, you know, I don't really know how to say this, but they said, don't ever send him back here. His French is terrible. And so, and he said, Krister, if we're gonna be successful in the French market, you need to improve your French, and you need to improve it quickly. So I did a little research, and I found a man named Jean-Luc in Belgium, who was considered by the European Wall Street Journal the best business French teacher in all of Europe. And so 2 weeks later, I was up in his house and did like a 1-week immersive training. And the interesting thing we found is, so he asked me, what did you say to the people in Cannes? And I told him the words I said in French. And he said, well, Krister, let me just translate what you just told them, these executives. He said, you must do this. It's absolutely necessary that you do that. And he was just, you are really condescending. And I realized in that moment that while my heart was in the right place, my words were not. And he said, Krister, here's what I'm going to do. I specialize in teaching you the 1% of the French language that you need to be successful in business. And I'm going to give you kind of fill in the blank scripts for how you can lead more effectively in French. And you don't need to learn the other 99% of the language. And so this is where 3 years later, I actually went on to learn German as well. And I replicated this process to, you know, really be, you know, if you're learning a new language, you have to be really conscious of what are the words you use. You translate it in your head. And in doing that process, in really this is purely business French and business German, it gave me a much more sensitivity to the actual words that we use that are the kind of the core of effective leadership.
And it's interesting you mentioned, I mean, the language of leadership, the language of emotional intelligence. Before we actually started this recording, you were mentioning like the language of curiosity and like all these different languages. And it makes sense that you would use that word language because you've mastered several languages. And when you master like multiple languages, you really pay a lot more attention to the words that you use. Just before we dive into the emotional intelligence piece, can you share a little bit on how you were able to master multiple languages? I feel like it's something that either people just want to learn how to do as a hobby, or they can really appreciate the business aspect of knowing multiple languages.
I think that I don't think I've ever met anyone who didn't really learn a new language unless they lived in the country for some period of years, to the degree that learning a new language most quickly is best done through the kind of immersive programs that I did. They say that if you go and live in a house with where you're only allowed to speak the language for a week, and you have, you know, you're meeting all day long with instructors, they say that that's the equivalent of living in a country for a year. I actually have a funny story that when I walked into Jean-Luc's home, there was this guy. He was kind of an old guy. He was like in his 60s or 70s, and I kind of recognized him. And he spoke. He was an American, and we weren't allowed to speak English to each other for the week. And he had just come there because his wife wanted to learn French, kind of like a vacation thing, because they were clearly retired. And by the seventh day, he was just barely able to speak enough French to tell us that he was the preacher on the TV show MASH. So I realized that I was spending this entire week living under the same roof with this kind of big, you know, Hollywood TV star, but was completely unable to speak with him because he couldn't speak any French back to me.
That definitely is that is interesting. I mean, what kind of odds are that to happen? And I really like this idea of total immersion. I feel like if you want to be successful in any area, you really have to totally immerse yourself, surround yourself with all the people who are going to teach you how to master the skill you want to master, putting in the action. It's one thing to learn how to do a push-up, it's another thing to actually do the push-up. So I like this idea of total immersion. And when it comes to leadership, I mean, I believe emotional intelligence is certainly a very important part of that. I'm wondering if we could talk first about how we can build our own emotional intelligence and then how we can help our assistants and employees do the same.
Yeah, so here's I read a lot of books when I was young. I was what I call an emotional Einstein, which is not a good thing. So an emotional Einstein is somebody who analyzes emotions rather than actually feeling them. And I had read all the books like Daniel Goleman's Emotional Intelligence, and I thought I really understood emotional intelligence. But what I realized, and it wasn't really only until the last 5 years, is that I really understood emotions, but I wasn't necessarily feeling them. And so, and really, if you read a lot about emotional intelligence, there's not really clear direction on how to build one's emotional intelligence, and also how to speak in a more emotionally intelligent way. And so, the key to emotional intelligence, I actually discovered. One of the things that I do, I call myself a leadership archaeologist. So I started reading books when I was 12, and I realized about 3 years ago when I retired as CEO that I had learned all these things from business books, but I really hadn't learned anything about some things like emotional intelligence, for example. And so I started really looking outside of the traditional business press. And that's what landed me in New York City a couple of years ago. And I was at a training course about the language of what I call the language of emotional intelligence. And I'm sitting in front of a guy, heavily tattooed, big muscular guy, and he's talking to me about his feelings for being after being released from maximum security prison for 20 years for murder. And what I learned later is this same language that got him out of solitary confinement and ultimately resulted in him transforming his life and being released from prison was the exact same language that Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella used to transform the culture at Microsoft. And it was based upon a book that was written by a man named Marshall Rosenberg that's sold millions of copies worldwide, yet it's never been on any bestseller list. Primarily because of the title. The title is it's called Nonviolent Communication. And you can imagine if you're sitting on a plane or you're sitting in a cafe and you're reading a book called Nonviolent Communication, people probably look at you like, you know, so Mark, like what's going on in life? You know, right. Got anything to tell us about home? So this is part of what I started doing by looking outside of kind of the Harvard Business Review and Business Press. What are these great resources? And so what this individual who wrote the book, he's no longer alive, built out a language framework for speaking in a more emotionally intelligent manner. And it's based upon specific language, what he calls empathy guesses. So I was a software engineer by training. Like I'm super, you know, let's say probably not many, like many engineers, emotional intelligence didn't come naturally to me. And this was the first thing that I'd ever found that gave me practical, implementable steps to speak with people with more empathy. And the power was, it was literally just a fill in the blanks phrase. So let's say someone is afraid or they're angry or whatever that I'm working with. The stem of the fill in the blanks is, I wonder if you are feeling blank. So, and then you insert the feeling word. I wonder if you're feeling angry because you are needing blank. So I wonder if you're feeling angry because you're needing more safety or something like this. And so what happens here is because it's an empathy guess, I'm saying, I wonder, what happens is people tend to correct you and they say, you know, Mark, no, I'm not feeling angry or I'm not needing safety. I'm just needing more, you know, whatever. And so what happens is when you're dealing with people on an ongoing basis and you start making more of these empathy guesses, you start getting more emotionally attuned to that individual. So let's say you make 100 empathy guesses and you get, you know, 50 of them wrong, just natural. Anytime we do something 100 times, we start to get a little bit more calibrated to those other individuals. And since all people tend to be, you know, somewhat similar when it comes to the basic emotions, we not only develop more emotional intelligence for dealing with that individual, we also develop more emotional intelligence for dealing with all individuals.
And it's interesting how you mentioned the emotional intelligence. Like some people, they may need that script. And even if you feel like you have the empathy, it's good to have that kind of a script because it allows us to better communicate our feelings and our empathy towards others. Because it's one thing to have empathy, it's something else to be able to communicate it. And if you want to be a leader to your team, you have to be able to communicate certain things that you feel are essential to communicate, such as the empathy, which we just covered, and the emotional intelligence. Like, I like those scripts. I feel like those could be helpful for people who are learning it. What would you recommend for your team? Would you just give them those scripts, or does fostering emotional intelligence on your team go a little deeper than that?
I think it really starts with the leader. So if I'm the leader, there are actually a couple steps before we get there. So the first is I need to be aware of the emotions that I'm feeling. And I think that I myself was one of those people that if someone said, what emotion are you, or how are you feeling? I'd be like, fine, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling bad. Well, good, bad, and fine are not actually emotions. Their emotions are, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling hurt. You know, these are emotions. So the first is, again, coming back to language, is getting a language of emotions. So if you look up the word to feel, and interestingly, English makes it a little bit more difficult to communicate in an emotionally intelligent way than some other languages. The reason why is if you look up the word to feel in an English thesaurus, you'll see the word to think. But if you were to go to a French thesaurus or a German thesaurus or many other languages in the world and you look up the word to feel, so in French it's sentir, you would not see the word penser, which is to think, in a French thesaurus. But what happens when we as leaders, and this is what really screwed me up for years, I would say, you know, I feel, Mark, I feel like you didn't do a great job on this project. Well, that's not a feeling, that's a thought. So if I can say, I think that you didn't do a great job on this project, then I'm using the word feel, but I'm actually sharing a thought. So the first thing we do that disconnects us from others is being unaware that our language, while we're using the word feel, isn't actually, we're not talking about emotions at all. And so here's how to fix it. The language stem is, I feel blank. If you say, I feel that, then you're saying, I think that. If I say, I feel like, I think, basically, I feel like is usually, I feel like you are doing something. I think that you are doing something. So you eliminate, never say the word like or that after the word feel. The next word must always be an emotion word. Sad, angry, hurt, blank, you know, and, you know, happy, whatever it may be. So that's the first step. Then the second step as you go through it is to recognize that many of the words that we think are feelings are actually what I call false feelings. So I feel frustrated. I feel attacked. I feel betrayed. So if I can complete the blank, complete the sentence, I feel that you betrayed me, or I think that you betrayed me, or even shorter, you betrayed me. If that emotion word actually fits in the sentence, you blank me, it's not an emotion. It's my judgment about something that you've done. I feel attacked. You attacked me. That's not an emotion. So often words that end in ED that we think are emotion words are not actually emotion words. They're actually words that disconnect us. So I feel frustrated. You frustrated me. That's kind of like, that's a little bit of a gray area, right? So it's a little bit of a language tool to help identify how we can start to speak in a more emotionally intelligent way.
And I mean, that's part of translation. It's interesting how different words mean very different things, even though they seem like the same, depending on which language you look. And it's important to know those subtle differences, because you could be communicating one message and the people on your team take it as an entirely different message. Or even taking this out of business, like not just people on your team, but like friends, family, anyone like that. Like, you want to make sure that you are communicating in the right way. And I feel like that is something that a lot of people struggle with, that ability to communicate the right way, that ability to lead their teams. And I'm wondering if you could share with us, what do you believe holds most people back from being great leaders?
I do believe that it comes, in large part, it comes back to, one part is emotional intelligence. Like, for example, you know, if I'm saying words that are causing the person on the other side of the table to be angry, then I'm not getting their best work, right? They're walking out of my office. They're frustrated. Like, why did he say that? Well, when they're in that mode and they're complaining, whether it's in their own heads or to their colleagues about the boss, they're not getting any work done. And they're also hurting the experience of the other people around them. So I think that this emotional intelligence is a key element. I also think another element of emotional intelligence is impulse control, which gets us right to the core of anger. So usually, at least my experience as CEO, the emotion that I felt most frequently was anger. And frustration is just kind of a form of anger or disappointment, whatever it may be. And so one of the things that I learned in my journey over the last couple of years was that anger is really just an alarm bell. So a lot of psychologists believe that anger is not a primary emotion, that whenever we feel anger, the next question is to say, well, what's behind my anger? And often what's behind anger is fear, hurt, or sadness. So let's say somebody, let's say you have a proposal for a big client or some work that was done for a big client and it didn't go well. And as a leader, I'm angry about that, right? But if I say, what's behind my anger? Well, most often what I find, at least in my personal experience, is that what's behind my anger is actually fear. So if we have a project that failed or something that went wrong for one of my biggest clients, what I'm really afraid of is that we're going to lose that big client. And I'm not going to be able to afford to pay my payroll, or I'm not going to be able to afford to pay myself. And so if I want to connect with people, rather than saying, Mark, I'm angry about this project, I can say, Mark, I'm afraid. And if we want someone to kind of walk out of our office and say, I don't want to make a mistake again, because if I like my boss, if I like the person who's leading me, I don't want them to be afraid. I mean, I don't want him to be angry either, but I'm so much more emotionally invested in not making someone that I like be afraid than I am necessarily about making them angry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting point. Like, I mean, I really like that idea of anger as an alarm bell. It's, I mean, anger is the word that you hear, but there's some underlying meaning behind it. Like, why are you angry? Is it, I mean, fear, hurt, or sadness, as Krister mentioned, which, I mean, I think all anger really could just boil down to those things. And, I mean, knowing, like, how words like anger, they could boil down to those different things and other examples like that, that is how you're able to be that leader. You're able to see what's bothering people on your team. Like maybe someone else says I'm angry, or maybe they're not as productive, and being able to dig a little deeper than just what's on the surface can really help with having a stronger team, having a more productive team. So I like that idea of the anger standpoint. And
I'm going to play off that again because I think there's even more. Like, so you've got, so what happens when I do say I'm angry? I mean, a lot of your listeners are in kind of creative professions, right? So, or creative professionals. So if you report to me and I'm angry at you, what emotion does that likely to evoke in you? Fear. Well, all of the research shows that when you put people who are in a state of fear in like fMRI scanners, the part of the brain that's responsible for creativity shuts down. So that person leaves my office. I'm angry at them. They're afraid, and they're not going back to their desk and doing their best, most creative work. And sometimes what I've realized is sometimes I always thought that like, well, anger is just kind of in that moment or fear or whatever it may be. But sometimes these emotions subconsciously linger for hours or, you know, when I started tracking some of my emotional reactions to things, sometimes I would have an emotional reaction to something that would be 12 or even maybe 24 hours after the event because I'm still processing it and playing it through in my head. So this thought that somebody's going to walk out of my office when they're afraid or angry, and then they're just going to recover from that like 6 to 12 minutes later, is just not real. Like they're going home. They may lose sleep over it that night, and then they're not going to come in necessarily as fresh doing great work the next day. So this kind of thought of putting people in a state of fear or hurt, it has a much bigger impact on productivity than I think most leaders actually realize.
That is a really great point, especially for the creative standpoint, because, I mean, it's definitely a lot harder to create something of high value, let alone something, when you've got fear running through you. I mean, fear, like, puts you in a state of anxiety. It puts you in a state of constant thought on the thing that maybe you can't control. In some cases, it's something that you can control, but you're afraid of the response you're going to get. But, I mean, it's definitely something that really affects productivity, that fear factor, and it's certainly something you don't want to enforce within your team. And I mean, I really find that really interesting. Like, one of the things as creatives, we can just eliminate that fear and develop habits that allow us to counter any fear that comes our way. And I'm wondering, Krister, if you could share with us some of the habits that you would consider essential to your success.
Habits essential to my success. I don't know. I mean, like they're kind of trite, like hard work, being passionate about what you do, knowing and having clarity about, you know, what are the things that you're truly passionate about versus things that, I mean, I don't know. I assume that there's all kinds of motivational speakers talking about that, right?
I mean, it really does just boil down to you doing the work that you love. It's definitely something that gets a lot of coverage from motivational speakers, but there's just a point where you just got to get out there and do it if you're not doing it right now.
Yeah. I think I want to come back to something you said earlier about like getting people kind of, you know, the creatives. Maybe we can talk a little bit about how do you get a creative into a state of flow where they're kind of, so we talked about the negative where getting them afraid kind of shuts them down, but maybe we talk about the opposite of like, well, so how do we get them leaving our offices like where they're like, wow, I know exactly what I want to do.
Definitely. I mean, that sounds like a great topic.
So So what I found, so I'll tell a story. So I went to, I read a book, which I think is a great book. By the way, my book is it's called The Language of Leadership, and listeners can go to krister.com/book to get on the mailing list for when it's going to be launched. It'll be launched on Boss's Day, October 16th, 2019. But in any case, there's a great book that kind of gets into some of the things I'm going to talk about. It's called Quiet Leadership. And it's I read the book the first time, and I honestly didn't really believe a lot of the things that were in there about how leaders ask great questions that get people in a state of flow. But I actually went to a workshop on this a couple of years ago. And so I'm sitting, and so they said, to illustrate this example of how simple questions can get people into a state of flow and bring them to really unique insights, they actually had just had a list of questions. It was, and if I'd shared the list of questions, you'd be like, how are those questions going to lead me to insight? I said, well, Krister, why don't you sit here in this chair? And the other 20 people lined up behind the person who was going to ask these questions. And the person was instructed to just pick a question at random from the list. And we were just talking about the challenge that I threw out is like, I want to get in shape, you know? And so she starts out and she says, well, how long have you been thinking about this? And so I've been thinking about it for 10 years or whatever it may be. And I think the next question was, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this to you? Oh, well, it's a 9. And so in any case, going through this, literally within 5 minutes, a person picking random questions off of a list, I come to this really profound insight about what was holding me back. And if you think of those questions, how long have you been thinking about this? On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this? You literally could take with nearly any problem, you could actually do those. Because what it does is it just puts someone, rather than me telling them what to do, I'm putting them in their own mind and helping them to start to solve their own problem. And when someone has their own solution and they walk out of my office, they're like, yeah, I already know what I want to do. Like sometimes as a leader, when I started practicing some of these things, I don't even need to know what the solution is. When you see someone's eyes lit up, like, yeah, I got the solution. So what this came to was I created an exercise that's available on my website called the Magic Management 8-Ball Challenge, which is, it's a list of 15 questions, again, that you could completely select at random to have much more powerful conversations with your assistants or the people who are working for you to allow them to bring them to their own insights and their own solutions rather than leading them to the solutions that we think they should execute. And people are going to spend a lot more, they're going to be much more productive executing the solutions that they come up with than necessarily the solutions that we tell them to do.
That's a very important distinction Krister makes. You can control yourself. You can control your actions, but you can't control other people. They have to come up with the decision on their own. So it is better to give them those guiding questions than say, you have to do this. You have to think in this manner. So I really like the ideas Krister mentioned, that that 8-ball challenge, the Magical Management 8-ball challenge, and Krister's book and all the other resources we've covered, those will be in the show notes, markbirdie.com/E325. We'll also throw in Content Marketing Secrets and Podcast Domination, which are two of my books. And before we wrap up this episode, Krister, I know you gave us a question recently. How long have you been thinking about this? Which I think is really great for people to determine what's really important in their lives. But I'm wondering if you could share with us one more question that you believe we need to ask ourselves more often.
I think of it as the simplest, the less, well, I mean, maybe like more broadly, I think whenever anything happens to us, and I think this is a great question to ask others as well, is, so if we can imagine that this situation, let's say something bad happens, and we say, if we could imagine that this was something that was kind of, that this situation happened to us in order to teach us a lesson, what lesson would that be? And getting people thinking about, okay, what is the lesson that I'm learning through this, you know, potentially negative experience? I think that that's certainly one of them.
Krister, thank you for sharing with us that very valuable question, all of your great insights throughout our time together. If you guys want to learn more about Krister, go over to krister.com, krister.com. If you do that slash book, you'll get to learn more about his book. And one of the things that I invite you all to do, are you listening at home or your car or anywhere else, I hope you find some time to join us in the Breakthrough Success community and share your top takeaways from this episode. If you're not a part of that community yet, you can join us by going to contentmarketingplaza.com/Facebook. You'll be directed to the group. I hope you share your key takeaway with us from this excellent episode where Krister delivered some awesome insights with us. So, Krister, once again, thank you so much for being on the Breakthrough Success podcast.
All right, thank you.
Want to dominate the podcasting industry? Now you can with your free copy of my book, Podcast Domination. You'll learn how to launch, grow, and monetize your very own show. And whether you are a beginner or an expert, this book has a lot of golden nuggets for you. We'll cover the cost of producing this book. All we ask is that you cover the shipping. To get your copy, head over to markgiberti.com/PD.